Thursday, May 7th, 2015. We're here at the Red Sound Studios out in Warrington, Pennsylvania. We're listening to Wizard Radio here. As always, I'm your host, Justin Emery. We got my host right here, Mike Ivano, with me. How you doing?
You know what? I'm a little steamed this week, to be honest. And I actually have a little rebuttal to LaShawn McCoy.
Do you?
Yeah, I have a little something I like to play, a little classic for everybody.
Okay, hey Ben, if you don't mind, can you play that song for us?
No way. Not you. Chip Kelly. Jason Peters. Nah, LaShawn. Don't do it. Week 14. Here, cut it.
All right, so that's some pretty powerful words from you for Shady right there.
Yeah, I'm a little upset, and this isn't the first time. If this is like the first time he said anything, if there was any real evidence to back this up,
I mean, it's pretty blatant that he's still butthurt that he got traded.
Right, and that's really what all this is really about. Say that. I mean, how much money did Chip Kelly allocate? You know what I mean? A lot of players.
Well, I mean, the nickname that's getting thrown around for him today is Salty McCoy.
Salty McCoy instead of Shady. Definitely. The real Slim Shady, as they say, would never whine like this. Nor would he whine during a season. He gets traded after a year in which he runs for hundreds of yards less yards per carry.
Backwards.
And gets traded to a team who is willing to pay him more money for more years. So really, it's an ideal situation for LaShawn McCoy, and the Eagles get something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who will complain that you get traded to another team and then you get a $7 million pay raise.
I mean, it's unheard of, really.
I mean, I know it's Buffalo. Don't get me wrong.
To have
like, Buffalo
3 years left on your contract and to get an extension for an increase like that when you're already making 11 or, you know, 10, 11, 12 million a year, that's really rare. And we'll see if that straps them, because really, if you look around the league where the running back is such a young position, and I know this year we saw two running backs in the first round. So it might be coming back a little bit with the success that Seattle's been having with the ground and pound with Marshawn Lynch.
I mean, it's gonna be interesting. I like the fact they got three backs.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Spreading the ball around.
I mean, how could you say that Chip Kelly's racist? I mean, it's not
like
he brought
in
another black running back.
I'll be honest with you. On your last question, I had no idea what you said. I was trying to get the chat open on my phone.
What?
Oh, when you just stared at me right there. You're like, what do you think?
No, it wasn't a question.
All right, good, because I was trying to get the app up on my phone so I can jump on the message board about everybody getting on you.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love LaShawn McCoy as a player, and I think he did a lot of good for us for a lot of years, but I'm happy with our running back situation now.
Absolutely. I mean,
I'm happy with this offense, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely had to pair up DeMarco Murray with a back that can take some of the weight off of him, and Ryan Matthews, and
right.
Even still Darren Sproles.
Exactly.
Because just the pure amount of carries that he got last year, and as good as the Eagles' offensive line is, it's not as good as the Cowboys, as much as I would, you know, don't want to admit that. And
it's not
with
as
the addition,
young, definitely not as young.
Yeah, and the addition of Lyle Collins.
That definitely bolsters that as well.
Oh, real quick, before I forget to get to it, we got a couple of guests joining us tonight. We have two of them. We have, where are the names at? Here they are. We have Jeff Kane joining us at 8:15. He's the Patriots content manager for CLNS Radio up in Boston. And he's also the host of the Patriots Beat podcast. He'll be joining us to figure out what's going on up there with Tom Brady and all them. And then we got our good old friend, Bahan Shaka, the NBA editor for Vavil.com.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think it was
losing my voice there.
The beginning of the NBA season when we talked to him last. And now coming up.
Actually, I looked up the date when we had him on. It was October. I have it written right here. Hold on, let me pull up mine. October 29th, 2014. It was the day of the first game for the Sixers.
So the exact.
Yeah, we had him at the very beginning of the season.
So now, with how this playoffs has really turned out, and it's really been exciting, and you see Chris Paul's banged up, and now John Wall's probably out for the series with five broken bones in his hand and wrist.
Yeah, and his left hand and wrist, he got five non-displaced fractures.
It's really upsetting. They really look like they were going to go a long way this year, especially with Paul Pierce's clutch shooting ability that really boosted that team. You know,
I mean, we can beat around the bush as much as we want, though, as far as you saying, you know, they were really going to do something. They're not getting past the Cavaliers in the East, though.
I would have said that before Game 4.
No, I disagree.
See, no Kevin Love. I know J.R. Smith's only missing two games, but I'm not sold on the Cavs. I think that the Cavs will lose to the Hawks, to be honest. If they had Kevin Love, it would have been a difference maker because it would have been too much talent spread across the floor. But I think that the Hawks can probe that subpar defense of the Cavs, but unelite defense of the Cavs.
I mean, it's not a great defense, but they have the best defensive player.
Right, but, you know, unlike any other team where you can just stick LeBron on the best player and take away scoring, you can't really do that to the Hawks. They move the ball around. If LeBron tries to key it too much on any one thing, it's just going to leave space on their floor for the other guys.
I mean, I agree with what you're saying.
Now, we'll see. I don't think that any team in the East really has a chance against teams in the West.
No. Now, I mean, obviously, we're going to be discussing later on in the episode the NBA playoffs.
I want to save that.
But, I mean, we don't even have to save it. There's so much to talk about. But
sure.
I mean, the next big thing for Philadelphia sports fans isn't the Phillies.
No.
It's not the Flyers.
Uh-uh.
There's not much going on between now and training camp for the Eagles. You know what the most important thing next is?
Sixers.
The NBA lottery, and then the NBA draft. So I got, you know, off of CBSSports.com today, I got off of the top five projected players.
Ooh.
So you've got to assume the Sixers are going to have at least one of those picks.
They're one of them.
So we got Karl Anthony Towns from Kentucky, Jahlil Okafor from Duke, Emmanuel Mudiay from China, D'Angelo Russell from Ohio State, and Justice Winslow from Duke. We got two Duke guys going in the top five.
I hope Winslow, to be honest. That's the guy I would like. I think he fits our need best.
I would rather have Russell.
Russell more of a shooter?
Yes.
See, I like Winslow because he's a big, strong two, and to go along with the team, it's going to have...
Russell just kind of does everything.
Who would you compare Russell to in the NBA?
Let me think about that. Well, all right. Obviously, without his star power potential, all right.
Right.
But he's a scoring point guard. He's a Russell Westbrook scoring point guard.
Right. Not quite as good. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
That's his style. He's a point guard that just takes to the rack.
Yeah, I think we could use the point guard with that.
I watched him play against Penn State.
He'll definitely be there because we'll probably end up with the second and third pick.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And Okafor is going to go first.
Probably.
But
we might get the first pick. Who knows?
I mean, if you have the first pick, you still have to take Okafor.
We'll get the first and the sixth. We will take Okafor if we get the first pick.
Absolutely.
And Hinkie will not. Because then, I mean, usually guys like Embiid and Okafor don't ever hit the trade market, especially this young in their career. Who knows what that could fetch? Who knows what superstar that could get? You know, for a team to start with a new young piece.
Yeah, I remember watching Russell play. And, like, He didn't really score that much. I think he only had like 8 or 10 points at halftime, but I think he had like 25 plus in the second half.
And that's the mark really you're looking for in a good player. games and games in the NBA, you're not going to do well. But how you finish down the stretch is really what separates players. The good from the great. You know, the J.R. Smith from the Allen Iversons.
Yeah, but I want to switch topics real quick because I know he'll be joining us soon. I want to get into this story that is...
This one
that is Deflategate.
This one gets me deep.
The thing is like, for the longest time, I disliked Tom Brady.
Listen, I
Hold on. I disliked him. And then I realized you just have to accept the greatness when you say it. And now it's just getting to the point of... You don't, like, you're Tom Brady. You don't need to cheat.
Right. To me, I agree with what Brady's doing. Everybody's telling him to come clean and la-da-da and this and that. I don't think any of them would come clean in this situation. I don't think Brady did it because I don't have the proof that Brady did it. And I live my life by a simple acronym, ADD. Admit nothing, deny everything, demand proof. And that's what the Patriots are doing right now. That's what the czar, Bill Belichick, is handing down. And I tell you right now, Robert Kraft will be in the street if Tom Brady gets suspended.
Yo, did you see his quotes?
Oh, he's pissed off.
Yo, his quote was great.
As far as owners go in the NFL, like who has the most power?
Oh, it's definitely he's up there.
Robert Kraft is damn near the top.
Oh yeah, he's definitely top three.
And I'll tell you right now. Robert Kraft's the one who kept Goodell. When everybody probably wanted to get him, Robert Kraft was like, leave the moneymaker where he's at.
Absolutely.
Is what he said. And he said, I'm the moneymaker.
I have to find this. I have to try to find this quote real quick from Robert Kraft. It's great.
Go to the ESPN app and the NFL News Twitter page, like the Now.
All right. Yeah, I got you. Hold on a minute. Well,
that's where
he metaphorically just gives the middle finger to
Roger
Goodell.
But there is really no proof. I mean, it's hearsay. And, I mean, I can't believe it. And then they're asking Tom Brady for his text messages and emails. He don't have to give that to them.
No, he's probably got...
This is a free country.
He's probably got
naked
photos of his wife.
Right, you're not getting in there.
No.
Or it just pertains to this. I mean, once you open that barrel and let somebody into one text message, they kind of have the right to go after them all. You can't pick and choose. It's hard to do. How do you know which... I mean, they could have looked at any email that he sent to any one of his teammates. Or anyone in the organization. That's private information. I know we live in this social media era, but we got to respect privacy. And even, I mean, I'll tell you, there was a quote from Dwayne Allen right after Deflategate, within the first week, not even before the Pro Bowl, and I quote, that the Patriots could have beat them with bars of soap for ball.
Oh, yeah. The final score... was like
we're talking about a 45-7 game.
Yeah, it wasn't even close. Like they lost by 6 touchdowns.
I mean, it's not like they scored a lot. Like they used the footballs they wanted to use. They were fine. Did that help that they were scoring on it? I mean, did the deflated football help the running backs run over the Colts offensive line defensive line again and again and again and again? Did that help?
No. Let me give you
Tom Brady was throwing 4-yard passes.
Let me give you two little bits of information that I collected today in researching this topic a little bit. Number one, Mike Florio. I don't know if you know who that is. He does the Pro Football Talk. He talked to a ref today who, you know how they have like that union of referees and like they have crew anchors, crew chiefs or whatever
right.
it is. So this is an anonymous crew chief. In that he's an active NFL ref and said that under any other commissioner in the entire NFL history, this never would have happened.
What never would have happened? Deflategate?
Yes.
You never would have heard about it.
No.
Or you never would have happened.
The exact quote is, wouldn't have happened under any other commissioner in the history of this league.
Oh, and he said, no, it never would have happened.
Never would have happened, period.
Yeah, I'll say this to that. And one thing to say to that, Sean Payton was basically thrown out of the NFL for a year for Bounty Gate, as we call it, and now everything's gate after it. But this issue really comes down to, I mean, you have no clue who did what. And, I mean, back in the day, bounties were a normal thing. Guys taking guys' head off. I mean, it's helmet-to-helmet contact rule that we have today. I mean, it was thrown away. Guys would get high load. It was a very aggressive league, almost even the dirty league. How about when the end, you know, 20, 30 years ago, would come and hand slap players? I mean, they would just come off the line and reach back and slap the offensive lineman right in the head, and that was fine. That was legal. That was a pass rush move. But, I mean, people got to remember that. So when you're trying to ask questions about what is this and what is that, I mean, there's kind of a mantra. If you're not cheating, if you're not looking for every edge, every way to win, then what are you doing here? You know, maybe the Patriots bent the rules sometimes, but a little rule bending is not going to win you four Super Bowls. I don't know how much, you know, Spygate, that was big. That's big. So if you're filming people's practices to that extent, to me, that's bad. But, I mean, if to me you're just looking at the calls they're calling in the first half and then the coach doesn't have the board in his face and then you're looking at what he's calling this half and you're reading his lips, then to me, I think in baseball you see that the second when guys are on second to look in, or sometimes you'll even have guys in the dugout. The Phillies were even accused of that. Their dugout coach had his binoculars looking at the count for the catcher that was throwing to know what pitch was coming, and he was relaying signals. So, I mean, you've seen that in baseball for a long time. So I think that really what this boils down to is almost a bitterness that people have against the Patriots and have against them for winning, and winning in such a manner, you know, not talking, not saying anything, and playing very close to the chest, and, you know what I mean, being creative when you have to be. I mean, the Patriots team offensively and defensively is different schematically a week to week at this point in Brady's career. So I think it's a little bit of a bitter feeling that most of the nation has towards Tom Brady for all the success that he's had. By this point, he's probably knocked about everybody's team out of the playoffs almost.
Probably. Now, we have our first guest up on the line. We have Jeff Kane. He's the Patriots content manager for CLNSradio.com. He's also the host of the Patriots Beat podcast. He's joining us right now to talk about, you know, obviously what every Patriots fan's favorite topic is, the Deflategate. Hey, Jeff, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, thanks, fellas. How you doing?
Not too bad, you know, just getting ready for this NFL season to kick off. And one of my favorite non-Eagles players has his name thrown in the mud, unfortunately.
A little bit these days, don't you think?
I mean, give the guys credit. You know, he's a four-time Super Bowl champion, the best quarterback of all time.
I think people are a little jealous.
They won that game 45-7. What kind of impact does this really have?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, obviously not as much as people might think. At halftime, it was 17-7. They came back out, and after halftime, with properly inflated footballs, and Brady had a almost flawless passing record. And they absolutely throttled the Colts. And it wasn't like Tom Brady was throwing the ball all over the place. They had the running back and LeGarrette Blount, who was absolutely stuffing it down Indianapolis' throat. But obviously, this with the Wells report coming out, there are some serious allegations against Tom Brady and the two equipment managers.
Yeah, I feel like most of this is being almost inferred. I mean, I haven't read the Wells report personally, so I don't know exactly what's in there. But have you seen anything that seems even factual at all to prove this?
Well, I myself have spent the time reading through all 200-plus pages of the Wells report, trying to get an understanding of how everything kind of went down. And you could take it a couple different ways. Many times in the Wells report, they refer to the two equipment managers, JJ and McNally, with text messages back and forth about how Tom Brady likes his balls. And, you know, they go back and forth, joking about how the refs screwed them in the New York game with the pounds per square inch being 16, and then coming back and joking back and forth saying, F Tom like they hate him. So there's that there. There's certain points in there. I mean, they've come out and they've said that Brady, it's probable that he had a general knowledge of it. And Tom Brady himself has come out just a little while ago saying that he doesn't have a comment on the status right now, and that he it's only been 30 hours, and when he has time to digest it, he'll be sure to comment on it. So it's what the Wells report has come out with is some accusations against, and I appreciate you guys saying that he's probably one of the best quarterbacks of all time. I happen to believe it too. And I don't think this should or will define Tom Brady. We're talking about a couple PSI here. I have some strong feelings on it. I don't like to see Brady being cast in a negative light. He never has been in his career. And this one stings for Patriots fans. So that's kind of where we sit there.
Yeah, and I see that it's a little here or there. The one thing I want to ask you, what do you take of, what would you say, what does it mean when they say more likely than not that he had a general idea? To me, that term that is so vague, it's unbelievable.
That to me, unfortunately, I'm not a lawyer. If I was a lawyer, I could probably tell you exactly what that means. That to me is lawyer speak into, we don't have any concrete evidence that Tom Brady knows, but because of the way that we are understanding text messages back and forth between people and what we've discussed in the interviews that we brought forth, that we believe that Tom Brady to be guilty. Brady cooperated to a certain extent with his time with interviews. He did not give his cell phone over or any electronic emails or anything like that. That was uncooperative. So, you wonder why someone of Brady's stature, if he has nothing to hide, why is he not giving all the evidence that he has? And then, of course, the Patriots themselves, who pretty much have been cleared of knowing anything, Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick, but they denied a second interview with Jim McNally, the man who was in question of deflating the balls.
Right. And, like you said, he didn't exactly cooperate by giving over his cell phone. But at the same time, why should he have to give over his cell phone in the first place, But I don't know if you caught what Marcellus Wiley said on with Sports Nation yesterday, I believe it was, but he called for an 8-16 game suspension for Tom Brady. Now,
I did.
Besides that being, he said it should be a minimum of 8 games upwards to a whole season. Now, besides that being completely outrageous, is there even a punishment you can give Tom Brady?
I think if you're going to do anything, I would expect a fine to Tom Brady. This is one of the most marketable stars in the NFL. And if they're going to do anything, they might suspend him. They may suspend him. I mean, in my estimation, depending on what Roger Goodell finds, it might be a game, it might be 2 games. I personally don't think it should be more than a game if he gets one. I mean, they gave Ray Rice, an initial 2-game suspension for, a disgusting act on his part. And, yes, Tom Brady, if this is all true, will have been found guilty of doctoring footballs to get a competitive advantage. So he would deserve a suspension. The question that I have is, what happens with the NFL here? Because if he is suspended, it's probably for 1 game. It's the first game of the season, Thursday night game where the Patriots raised their Super Bowl banner against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Ben Roethlisberger. It's Tom Brady. Do they lose advertising money? Do they lose you know, sponsorship money for that night. That's a huge night for NBC and the NFL. Do you want to take one of your most marketable stars and take him off the field to that game? People are still going to turn in. I mean, it is the NFL, but that is the conundrum that you sit there. And you wonder, you know, the NFL is a well-oiled machine. And to me, it seems like Roger Goodell's regime has been all about making money. And that is where we've seen them come out with Thursday night football games every week of the season. And we've seen them talk about expanding the playoffs and getting into an oversaturation. So I wonder if they are to suspend him, would they do that for the first game of the season, cutting off your nose to spite your face?
Absolutely. I mean, like you said, the NFL is all about money, and I don't even think you could say one of. I think he is the most marketable star in the NFL, arguably, besides LeBron James, maybe in all of sports. You would take Tom Brady. And, I mean, like, I was discussing with my dad yesterday. This is like, you know, Wayne Gretzky getting suspended. This is like Michael Jordan being suspended. No, these kind of things don't happen. But have you heard any reaction from other players about this? I mean, I saw the video today of Gronkowski flexing when he was asked about it. But has there been any other players chiming in on what their thoughts about this is?
Well, Julian Edelman has come in and saying that he, you know, supports his quarterback and he's got his quarterback's back. You know, Rob Gronkowski, I would have to say, you know, I don't know how he's looked upon outside of New England. In New England, he's looked upon as quite the jokester. He came out with basically a selfie video, as you guys were just describing and flexing and saying some funny things. I believe that the team is behind him 100%.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree with that. And, you know, when you're a four-time Super Bowl winner, it's hard not to be behind him and give him a full year. But, you know, I want to get back to a little bit of football for the Patriots. We actually play this year, but first I want to ask you, what do you think your team's chances are in this division, even if Brady misses two games?
I still think they have a solid chance in the AFC East. They have a very well put together football team. Under Bill Belichick, they have 14 straight winning seasons. That's really unheard of in the NFL, not only lately, but in history. Even when Brady went down a year, they ended up going 11-5. The division is definitely better. Rex Ryan has brought instant credibility to the Buffalo Bills. They had they made that trade with the Philadelphia Eagles and of course got LeSean McCoy, which will make them a better running team in my estimation. They had an amazing defense last year, so the Buffalo Bills should give the Patriots a run for their money. Rex Ryan always has his team up and ready to play for the Patriots. The New York Jets, of course, they got Darrelle Revis back. They've brought Antonio Cromartie. They brought Buster Screen. They got a very, very good first-round draft pick in Leonard Williams. Cannot believe he fell to number six. Their offense has gotten better, of course, with the trade for Zach Stacy, signing ex-New England Patriot running back Stephen Ridley. Of course, they've got Brandon Marshall. It all depends on what Geno Smith can do as far as becoming a quarterback there. And the Miami Dolphins, I mean, they went out and made the big splash in free agency, signing Ndamukong Suh to some huge money. They are the most complete team because they have the best quarterback in the division outside of Tom Brady right now in Ryan Tannehill. You know, they made the trade with the New Orleans Saints for Kenny Stills. They got Devontae Parker in the first round. You know, they have stability in the coach. So that's a good organization coming up. And every time they play the Patriots, they play them tough. They beat them first week of the season last year. So the Patriots, while I still believe they are the favorite in the division, even if Brady were to be suspended for a game or two, it is going to be a much harder road this season for the New England Patriots to repeat not only as Super Bowl champion, but just as division champions as well. Because they've kind of come down to the pack by losing some of their players, and all the other three teams in the AFC East have come up and look to be just a quarterback away of catching the Patriots. Of course, I will always give the coaching edge to Bill Belichick over, you know, just about every coach in the NFL right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We, as he's known down here, he's known as the football czar. So,
you guys booed Santa Claus. I'm surprised you like, you're calling Bill Belichick the football god. That's funny.
I mean, when you got four Lombardi trophies, it's hard to dispute those facts. So, but Jeff, we don't want to take up too much of your time. We're going to get you out of here after this question. With Vincent Wilfork departing, and you know, obviously Revis as well, and I know that the Patriots drafted that defensive lineman in the first round. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Malcolm Brown.
But what do you think is the Yes, exactly. What is the biggest hole, do you think, is in this Patriots roster right now?
The biggest hole on this roster right now is who's going to be that step-up cornerback. You know, the Patriots have done a very nice job right now in moving on from Darrelle Revis. It's very hard to move on from a man of his character, his ability. He is probably one of the best cornerbacks of his generation. So they're going to change some things up this year. Last year was a lot of cover one with a one safety deep, and they played a lot of cover three as well in zone coverage there. They'll be moving back to more of an off-man coverage, two deep safeties. They'll be playing some cover two. The plan, I would say, right now, from what I'm seeing the Patriots devise their roster, is going to be to get more pressure with the front four, or you know, setting an extra rusher in five with what they've done in the off season here. I mean, they've gone ahead and they brought in Jabal Sheard from the Cleveland Browns. You know, he's a former eight sack man. They of course have Chandler Jones coming back, who has gotten progressively better each year. Rob Ninkovich, you know, is a very nice pass rusher. Malcolm Brown, they brought him in not to really replace Vince Wilfork, but to give him the ability to move into that role. And what they did in the draft, which I was very impressed with, is they've kind of built a rotation now as far as their defensive line goes. For the last couple of years, we've seen Chandler Jones and Rob Ninkovich, when they've been both been healthy, playing 90%+ of the snaps. And I think what they're looking for now with the signing of Jabal Sheard and of course, the rookies that they drafted some pretty you know, decent rookies right now. Of course, you don't know what they're going to do until they get the helmet on, but they have a bunch of upside here. They're going to be making a nice rotation here, and they're going to go from the, you know, a 3-4 you know, techniques probably down to a 4-3 where we'll get a little more attacking. Last year's first-round draft pick, Dominic Easley out of Florida, you know, he's really a type of guy who can attack the A-gaps to either side of the center. And they're going to look to really try to get some pressure up the middle and collapse the pocket. So I see the secondary being a little weak right now, but I think they've made up with it with their front seven. We should see what happens there. And on the offensive side of the ball right now, if you're looking at the New England Patriots, their running game is a little suspect right now. They've lost Shane Vereen, you know, who was a great receiver out of the backfield. They've lost Stephen Ridley, even though he was injured for most of the year last year. He was a former 1,200-yard carry back. LeGarrette Blount was suspended for the first game of the season. So it'll be interesting to see what comes along there, but they've got some pieces to the puzzle there.
Definitely. And that's going to definitely be the defense side of the ball is going to be what the Patriots need to focus on. You know, when you have Tom Brady on offense, you don't really have to do much. But, Jeff, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us tonight, and we hope to have you again on in the future.
Oh, definitely. I'd love to. Let's get together. We'll get to each other on each other's podcasts. You know, we play in the preseason, I believe, and we also play in the regular season. So let's get together and you know, have some good football talk. I appreciate you guys, you know, having me on tonight and you know, asking some good questions and not really attacking like some people have out there right now.
Definitely. Yeah. Now we always love a great football talk, no matter what the team root for. Everybody, that was Jeff Kane. Thanks for joining us. You can check him out at the Patriots Beat podcast. He's also the Patriots content manager for CLNSradio.com. And he's a Patriots guy, if you can't tell. But up on the line, we got one of our people. You know, you guys heard him on the radio with us several times before. We got Nick Macedo, Eagles reporter, Broken Bell Sports.
Surprise call.
Surprise call. He actually literally just texted me and was like, yo, what's the number I'm trying to call in? I gave it to him and got him on the line now. Hey, Nick, how's it going? Thanks for hanging.
What's up, Justin? How are you?
Not too bad. You know, just trying to figure out how Chip Kelly's a racist if he cut a red player from Oregon today.
Oh, boy. That's just some nonsense. I mean, I don't know what you're thinking, but, I mean, as far as I feel, that's just complete nonsense. And McCoy sounds like a whiny little girl. You know what I mean?
I mean, and let's just call it what it is. Like, he's still butthurt that he got traded. Like let's just call it what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. And it almost seems like you really can't say this often, but LeSean McCoy is almost a guy who has gotten more immature as the years have gone on. He's opened his mouth more, said more irrelevant things to the media, the more years and more confidence.
Don't forget about his little tour bus on his birthday, the strip club thing.
Yeah.
And then fighting with his baby's mom on Twitter and everything.
Yeah, Twitter. Yeah. I remember that too. I mean, you know, something could be said for Andy Reid not being here after Reid left. Maybe McCoy kind of mouthed off a little bit more, and maybe as you know, dollar signs start coming in, money starts coming in, contract, you start saying certain things. But I mean, I think it just comes down to, as you said, McCoy's butt hurt. He sounds like a scorned ex-girlfriend. He's a little pissed off right now, and he went with the Stephen A. Smith nonsense that was from a month ago and kind of went into that direction that Chip Kelly's a racist, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, just look at who he replaced McCoy with, DeMarco Murray, and, you know, he's an African-American. I mean, you know, the team is mainly made up of African-American players, so it's just nonsense, and Chip Kelly has, you know, been a college coach and a program with a number of African-American players. It's just silly. It's just complete nonsense. It's not even worth really talking about, but obviously we're talking about it and it's getting people to listen, but and that's probably what he wanted to do is cause some drama. But he needs to let it go. Hopefully the Eagles players, organization as a whole has moved on and is basically laughing this off, and this is not creating any drama in the offseason, you know, training camps and things as they start going over the next couple of days.
Yeah, the only thing I think this does more than anything else is, I tell you, I woke up this morning and I just thought, I cannot wait. So LeSean McCoy with the Buffalo Bills returned here on week 14. And I'm so happy it's actually in Philadelphia. So get to see a real reaction. And I'll tell you right now, if he was dancing a lot last year, I bet he'll be doing a lot of backwards jumping in that game.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that should be – the place will be going nuts that day. You know, that's a game late in the season at home. I like our chances in that game. I mean, obviously we're a long ways away, but – you know, the place is going to be rocking. They're going to be on Shady giving him some shit, you know. So it's going to be fun.
Let me just interject real quick away from Eagles talk. This is I literally just saw this. This is from the Associated Press. It's breaking news. Quarterback Tom Brady says deflated football scandal has not detracted from the Super Bowl win. Can someone explain to me what that means?
Well, I mean, I think right now, obviously, he's trying to play it off and deflect questions as far as the deflate gate goes. I mean, my thing is this. I'm not really sure why everybody's kind of so shocked about, you know, that Brady and the team knew about this. I think everybody realized that back in January and February when this was going down. I mean, it's not a surprise to me that, you know, the Deflategate happened and some of the pressure out of the balls were out of there. But to Tom Brady's point, really, if you're – and I know you just had the guy from New England on, and he was good. I can't say in his Boston accent, but he was good. But he's a good guy and all that. But what I'm saying is if you're from New England and you're a New England fan or you work for that organization, that's not going to – in my opinion, probably not going to diminish anything about this, even though there's going to be fines to come down, even though that there's going to be suspension. I mean, it's something that, in my opinion – is getting blown out of proportion. And I don't like the Patriots, all right? I can't stand them. They beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl. You know, there was the Spygate rumors. They won championships. I'm tired of seeing Boston parade down whatever, you know, whatever, in every sport, it seems like. But to be honest with you, I don't really – I'm not as fired up as other people are. It's obviously cheating. It's obviously taking a little bit of an advantage. But it's something that I find – from really talking to people that some quarterbacks have done over time, it's sort of similar to a pitcher having Vaseline on the inside of his jersey sleeve and things like that. And it's not a surprise to me that this is coming out with this report that, you know, Brady knew about. I mean, we all know that. I mean, he's obviously he touches the footballs and throws them around and feels them out before every game. So, I mean, you know, obviously I think there should be some fines to the team and maybe a suspension. I don't think he should be suspended for the whole year, as much as I can't stand them and Brady. But, I mean, I think that things get blown out of proportion now, and this is one of it, where we're talking about Shady McCoy with his nonsense and Deflategate, and instead of actually talking about football. And that's no one, you know, that's not our fault. That's just what escalates inside the media, and it just goes from, you know, this huge thing. So, I mean, that's kind of my thoughts on it from hearing that right off the bat.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it was 45-7 was the outcome of the game. It didn't matter. Like, right. The game is over. What was that quote you had about soap?
Oh yeah, Dwayne Allen a week after, not even the Pro Bowl didn't even get played yet. He says that we would have got beat if Tom Brady was throwing balls of soap around.
Exactly.
So, even exactly. The funny thing is, it was 17-7 at halftime when the officials realized about the footballs and tested them. So the second half of the game was played with regular footballs too. So, I just think it's that way of blowing.
And if, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe, if I remember, LeGarrette Blount was really the main part of the offense that day. So they were running the ball down the Colts' throat in that game. If I remember, I think he had a huge game, had huge numbers. And so, you know, obviously Brady threw a couple touchdown passes and he threw the ball a little bit, but it wasn't necessarily the biggest part of their offense that day. So, you know, deflating the balls or whatever has nothing to do with, you know, Blount and the offensive line, you know, manhandling the Colts. So there's that part of it too. But listen, you know, there definitely should be some repercussions from this. I think we all agree, but I think we're going – a whole nother level, like a, you know, witch hunt type of level that doesn't need to be, you know, really out there.
Definitely. Now let's switch it back to the team that we all know and that we all love, the Eagles. So I was checking out the schedule today, and I'll be hard pressed if they don't win 11 or 12 games. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, guys, I really do think that this team, if they stay healthy, is once again, a 10-11 win team. And, you know, a lot has to do with Sam Bradford and his health and the offensive line. Obviously, that's something that's going to be talked about throughout the entire summer and training camp and preseason. But if you really take a look at this team and everything that Kelly did this offseason, I like a lot of what he's done. A lot of moves have been made. A lot of people have been shipped out of here. A lot of people have been brought in. Really, besides the Bradford move, I like everything he's done. He's improved the secondary. He brought in Byron Maxwell, the top free agent at corner. He drafted three defensive backs. Eric Rowe was a steal in the second round. Might be able to play safety as well and solve that problem. You got two younger corners as well to go along with Walter Thurman. So, you know, he focused on the secondary, which is something that was really our Achilles heel over the last 2 years. That's number one. He brought in Kiko Alonso in this trade, and if he's healthy, he's going to be a man-child. And not only is he the type of player that is going to, you know, obviously, he's going to be the type of player that the fans are going to really fall in love with if he's a healthy player and he's out on the field and our defense has improved. And I know I'm saying if a lot. So there is a lot of ifs. But in my opinion, whether it's Bradford or Sanchez, if the Eagles run the football and have an improved defense, I believe that they can win the division and, you know, maybe be somewhat of a contender in the NFC. Obviously, we want to get that Super Bowl eventually. The fans want to see it. And, you know, we'll see what happens. But I think if this team, we have the best backfield in the NFL right now. DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles. I don't think you can really argue that. And you have an offensive line that is getting a little older. There's some question marks. But when healthy, is a good, solid offensive line. And if Sanchez is the guy that's in there, you know, I'm going to feel a little nervous about it. But if Bradford's in there, I think he, if he's healthy, has a little bit of an upside compared to Foles. I think this team can win 10, 11 games. I mean, that's kind of how I view it. I think that he improved the defense and decided to focus on the running game, whether it was by accident or not, getting DeMarco Murray. The team now has, you know, it's solid in the backfield, improved defense, and I think the team may be a little better than last year. And, hey, listen, we were 9-3. The Eagles were 9-3 at one point last year. We had the division going into December. We had it in our hands. And, listen, you know, there was a ton of turnovers at the end of the year by Mark Sanchez, bad play calling, bad coaching, and Bradley Fletcher and Kerry Williams were awful. But if we have Byron Maxwell on this team, or even Eric Rowe, the kid we just drafted, we probably win another game or two at the end of the season, and we're the division champs for the second year in a row. So I think people are overreacting a little bit. There's been a lot of moves, a lot of things. There are a lot of ifs when you head into training camp. But I think this team is right there in the hunt in the NFC East again, probably with Dallas, obviously. And that's my view on things after the draft, where we stand right now.
Yeah, the only thing that makes me a little bit nervous is that, at least on paper, the Cowboys had an excellent draft. And we don't know yet what the Giants' passing attack is going to look like, but with Victor Cruz paired out with Odell Beckham Jr., that could be a problem. Now, obviously, the Redskins are still the laughing stock of the division, but with other teams in the division getting better, and today I saw that Lyle Collins signed with the Cowboys.
Yes.
Is the Eagles, I guess, are the Eagles in as good of a position to win the division as we all think they are, or are the Cowboys and the Giants real threats to just bury them and the Eagles, you know, would have to fight for, God forbid, a second wild card position for the playoffs?
The way I see it right now, obviously Dallas had a good draft and signing the Collins to the offensive lineman, I mean, that's a steal. You know, he was supposed to go first round and, you know, he ends up in their lap. So they had a very good draft. There's no doubt about it. They won the division last year, but they lost to DeMarco Murray. Darren McFadden is a sneeze away from breaking his arm and being out for the rest of the season. The guy shows flashes, but he always gets hurt. Tony Romo, even though they have a great offensive line, he had a solid year last year. He had some real back issues. He's getting older. And listen, as I make those points, we got to realize I'm talking about Sam Bradford, who has major knee problems, and we're counting on his health. So, really, I think Dallas and the Eagles are the two best teams right now. The Giants, you know, they had a really bad season. They're giving Tom Coughlin and Eli Manning another run. The Giants are a weird team. They have a bad year or two, and then all of a sudden they come out of nowhere and win the Super Bowl. They've definitely improved. They've had some good drafts. But I feel like Coughlin has kind of lost touch, and I know people in New York have been saying that for years, but I think it's finally around that time. And Eli's another guy. He's an older quarterback. You know, how much, you know, he's streaky. So it's going to depend a lot on, obviously, health, as it does every year. But I think the Eagles right now and the Cowboys are probably the two best teams in the division. And to be honest with you, it's if Sam Bradford comes into training camp on time, shows some promise in preseason, I think the Eagles will, going into the season, be the favorite over the Cowboys. So that's something we'll have to wait and see on. But right now, I think the Eagles are right in the mix as far as the division goes. I would put the Cowboys probably number one. I put the Eagles at two, with very close with the Cowboys for the division. And then the Giants, the third best team, Washington, coming up the rear. They've got a lot of issues down there. But, you know, we'll see what happens. A lot has to happen. But right now I think the Eagles are set up to make a run for the division again and compete with Dallas.
Yeah, the one thing I want to say about Dallas is, how are they going to really replace DeMarco Murray, especially since the best running back on the team, Darry McFadden, has always been injured and unproven guys below them. Do you see Tony Romo's efficiency coming down, throwing more interceptions like he has in the past?
I would say yes, and that's kind of my point is, yes, the offensive line, Dallas has a great offensive line. But we got to remember last year, I mean, we manhandled that offensive line, especially on Thanksgiving. Fletcher Cox was a beast, and we were able to get pressure. We were able to stop DeMarco Murray on that day when we were playing them. We really played pretty decent against them in the second game, too, as far as pressure goes. It was more secondary. So, you know, and they made some upgrades. Dallas did again by today's signing. But here's the thing. Darren McFadden, you know, he shows flashes when healthy, can make some moves, but they're really lacking at the running back position, losing Murray. There's no doubt about it. And there's a lot of egos and a lot of problems on that team as far as off-the-field issues. Now, they're giving guys some chances, and I'll give Jerry Jones some credit for having the balls to go after some of the players they did. But, you know, Dez Bryant is one, you know, bad game from snapping on the sideline, and Jason Garrett did a great job last year. I just think that the Cowboys have a lot of talent. They definitely could be in the mix. They could win the division if everything kind of lines up. But I think last year, I'm not saying it was a fluke, but I think last year, all the stars aligned, and no pun intended, and I think they, at the end of the year when the Eagles went on that little slump, Cowboys won an extra game or two in December that they normally don't win, and they finally got over the hump into the playoffs. And I think the Eagles made some changes. Chip saw where the deficiencies were, and I think the Eagles are right there with them. And when the season starts, they'll be able to, you know, take the division and win it. And, to answer your question, like I said, I think not having Murray, replacing him with Fadden, is definitely going to have Romo. They're going to look to Romo to do more, like they did several years ago. And you'll see his interceptions go up. You'll see his QB rating go down. And that's where, you know, you see him get in trouble late in the season. Last year, they relied so much on that offensive line and DeMarco Murray that it was a different Romo. And that's where, you know, obviously I mentioned it earlier, his back problems. Romo is another guy. He's older. He's got back problems. And if you're going to ask him to drop back a lot, you know, we saw on Thanksgiving last year, he was hurt. He was not the same guy he was earlier in the season. And, you know, he got healthy, he had a bye week, and once they played us again, they beat us. There's no doubt about it. But if you're going to ask him to go out there and throw more because you don't have DeMarco Murray, and let's say McFadden gets injured for a week or two, you know, Dallas's offense can, you know, there could be some problems there.
For sure. And I just can't see the Cowboys winning the division in back-to-back years. Like, I just can't see that. And even in my wildest dreams, not a Jerry Jones owned team. Right? But let's be real now. Let's just be real. But before we take up too much time, Nick, I just want to get you out of here on one last note. You're looking at the opening day roster for the Eagles. You're looking at the depth chart. Who's the three wide receivers? You got Nelson Agholor, Jordan Matthews, and Hill.
Well, I think that our starting receivers this year will be Nelson Agholor, as you mentioned, Jordan Matthews, as you mentioned. I think Josh Huff is the number three guy. Now, I think that Agholor and Huff will be on the outside, and Matthews will stay on the inside. Possibility. I think they're going to give Matthews a chance to win a spot on the outside. And I like our young receivers. I mean, the way I look at it, Jordan Matthews is coming into the second year in the system. He had a very strong rookie year. You have Josh Huff, who showed a couple flashes, but really struggled to grasp everything in the NFL. But he definitely has the talent. So he's a guy that's going to get in the mix in the second year. And then Nelson Agholor is going to come in right away and be a top receiver on this team and get his chances to prove that he can be a weapon, sort of like Matthews last year. So I don't know how they're going to mix the three, but I think they're a top three. And then you look at Miles Austin. I think he was brought in here as a veteran, a guy who played with DeMarco Murray. They're buddies, you know, off the field. I think Miles is going to get a chance to make the team. I think that if he is healthy, he will be the fourth receiver. Then you look at the kid from San Diego they brought in, a special teams player. I can't even pronounce his name, forgive me, but he's a special teams guy they brought in. He's a guy that's going to be on the roster. He's not going to get much playing time as far as a receiver, but he's a guy that's definitely going to be on the roster because he was a special teams captain in San Diego. He's a special teams, you know, guru type of guy, and you know Chip likes to have those guys on the team and dressed on Sundays. So that leaves the last guy, Riley Cooper, and I think that this might be the offseason where Cooper is really fighting for his job. It sounds like the coaching staff likes Cooper because he works hard and he blocks and all that nonsense, but I really do think that if Miles Austin comes into camp healthy, in shape, and shows some flashes, he's the guy that's going to kind of be in that fourth, fifth receiver role, and Coop might be the guy that's on the odd man out. But they could keep six receivers. And they also picked up some undrafted free agents, some guys that have some speed. You know, some of those guys can be camp warriors and make a run in preseason. But I like our wide receivers, and I think the three young kids are going to be your starters. I really do, unless one of them has a hiccup in preseason via injury or just not getting the playbook or anything along those lines. I think it's going to be Jordan Matthews, Josh Huff, and Nelson Aguilar. And I think they might stick Matthews still in the middle, have Huff and Aguilar on the outside. I think that's to be determined, but I think we're going to have some young wideouts out there, talented young wide receivers.
I know. I'd love to see a young core just come together, and we're hoping that's going to happen with the Sixers and the Eagles. So hopefully two teams running up and up. But Nick, thanks for taking time tonight to jump on with us. As always, we love talking Eagles this year, and obviously we would definitely have you on the program in the future.
Absolutely, Justin. Great talking to you. Great show. And, hey, listen, I think it's going to be a strong year if everyone stays healthy. So stay tuned.
I love the positivity. Everybody, that was Nick Mosquito of BrokenBellSports.com. Follow him on Twitter at South Jersey Nick. Check his podcast out, too. Check it out on Podbean, South Jersey Nick. Today, he did a show, I believe, on DeSean McCoy and Chip Kelly being racist. That was his topic for his show today. So, really, he jumped on and had some fresh knowledge for that.
And one thing to, maybe this might be a little off point, but coming along with the health of the team and the health of Sam Bradford, I think a big thing that would relieve the pressure on Chip Kelly this year is that Nick Foles plays an egg.
Oh, that would definitely
be the Rams. And that's another team I'm probably going to watch as hard as the Eagles.
Definitely. And before we switch to NBA, because I know we're going to have our NBA guest on real soon, let's go down the Eagles schedule real quick.
Okay, now we have week one.
Are you going to keep track of wins and losses for both of us? I see you already have yours down there.
Week one, we have at Atlanta.
Win.
Week two, we have Dallas at Philly.
Win.
Obviously. Week three, Philly at the Jets.
I think they'll win, but I think it could has the potential to be a trap game.
That's a really tough game. I had that one as a loss.
I think it could be a potential trap.
Philadelphia at Washington.
Win.
Got to take that one. New Orleans at Philly.
Ooh. I would have given them an L, but I would not be surprised if they pulled out a win.
See, I have that as a win. I just think that Chip Kelly want to get one on Peyton. And that team's not going to be the same. They might put it together later in the year, but early in the year it's going to be all Philadelphia. Now, after that, the New York Giants visit the Philadelphia Eagles. What do you have there?
Who is it?
New York Giants in Philly.
You know what? We win there, they win here. I'm giving it a loss.
Lost. Two losses in a row. Philadelphia at Carolina. Is this a tough stretch? Does it continue?
Philadelphia at Carolina?
Yeah.
I have to give them a loss.
And actually, to be honest, folks, if I was keeping track of me, I actually have them all three as wins. I think Carolina and New Orleans are in the worst.
What do you
division.
Have them right now? What do I have them right now? 4-3? You have them at 6-1?
6-1, yeah.
All right.
The only real good team they played was Dallas, as far as I see, and they're going to beat them. The Jets is just a tough game in New York early in the year with Darrelle Revis, and that defense is going to be really tough. But then Miami comes to Philly, and I don't like Miami on the road. So I'll take Philly at home all day there.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
Okay, then we have Tampa Bay at Philly, another of the worst teams in the, worst
I don't see a rookie quarterback beating Jets.
Oh, and on a note, we'll see Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I'm going to give it either the win.
In Philadelphia. Philadelphia then travels to Detroit.
Thanksgiving.
Ooh. I have this one as a loss as it stands right now. Just in Detroit's a tough game. They're good on Thanksgiving. Although the way that Chip coaches does lead to good.
Hold on. Real quick, I got to ask you a question about your writing. Why is it all slanted?
What?
Why are you writing all slanted down the side of the page?
Because I'm not paying attention. I'm on my mic.
I don't
take the straight and narrow, sir. I make my own path.
Yeah, well, your path cuts about your page space in half. Anyway, I will give I'm going to give him a win. But I'm going to be rooting for Calvin Johnson that day because I probably have him in fantasy.
Now we have the 10-day turnaround, and we go to New England.
Ooh.
I don't even know what to pick. I put a win at first, and I put a loss. I don't know what to do here. But I think if the Eagles still have Sam Bradford at this point, it's probably a win.
Yeah. I'll in New England?
In New England.
Go loss.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to win there, but you just think
especially because you know Tom Brady's going to be pissed
he's
off.
He's going to score a lot of points.
He's going to be pissed off.
Not by that point in the year. That'll be a worn over. Everything.
No, the whole year is going to be he's going to be
now pissed off. Now we have the game of the year, folks. Buffalo, LeSean McCoy coming back to Philadelphia, and I'll be at this game.
I'm gonna give him a win, obviously, because I don't think Buffalo's that good.
I have a win for that, and I bet LeSean McCoy rushes for less than 50 yards. That is my early season prediction. Then we have Arizona at Philly. Now, we lost in Arizona last year. What do you see with this game?
We will win this year.
And that's what I have
as
well.
You know when the game is?
When the game is?
Yeah.
Like what day of the week?
No. What week is it? We're further down. We're in the cold. We're week 15? Oh, yeah.
Week
it's
15.
Cold here. Arizona doesn't want to come here.
They don't want to play here.
They do not want to play here.
Washington at Philadelphia.
I have to win.
And then the finish off the year, Philadelphia at the Giants.
Well, yeah, based off what I said earlier, you know,
you're going to have this one as a win. I have it as a win as well. Now, Justin has
12-4.
I am at 13-3, actually. And even though you see the turnovers league, this schedule we have has a few tough games. We have to win some tough games, but if you're going to go 12 or 13 wins, you're going to have to. But there's a lot of games that we get at home that are favorable for us, and the games we have on the road, like you say, at the Giants, I think, is a very winnable game. At Washington is a winnable game. At Carolina is a winnable game. I mean, Carolina is a team that we've really taken it to in years past. So I would go as far as my prediction for the Eagles is 12 wins. I know I have them at 13-3 here. They'll probably lose one that they shouldn't, you know, as every team does usually. But you're going to see that this is going to be a good year for the Eagles. And even if it's Mark Sanchez, you know, you're going to see an improved Mark Sanchez. I think I'm getting a little pollen bug in here.
Sorry, I had to go and had to go screen our guests. We got we're going to switch gears here. Bless you. All right, then. Well, I will switch gears here. And we're going to switch to NBA. We got a NBA guest on the line. We got Fahan. He's the NBA editor at Vavel.com. So join us to talk some NBA. Fahan, how you doing tonight?
Good. You guys?
Not too bad. So, you know, obviously we got a intense, you know, second-round matchups going on. Every single series is tied up 1-1. So as it stands right now, everybody has the same chance as moving on. Who are your favorites on these series? Who do you think will pull out of these four series?
Well, in the West, I have the Clippers and still the Warriors, even though the Grizzlies are a really good test for them. And then in the East, the Hawks, and I still think the Cavaliers will pull it off in seven games, despite all the injuries.
Yeah, that was definitely a tough loss with Kevin Love, and it really opens it up for Atlanta to take a chance maybe in the next series versus them. But what is your highlight so far of the playoffs? I mean, for me, it's got to be that Spurs-Clippers series, and I was so sad to see that in the first round.
Yeah, that's the highlight for me, too. That was an incredible first round. I mean, that could have been a Western Conference Finals matchup right there if it wasn't for the tough Western Conference with the positioning and Spurs falling to sixth place last day of the season. But that was a really exciting matchup right there.
Yeah, and I mean, who would have seen that, you know, Chris Paul supposedly, you know, can't get it done in the playoffs, and who hits the game-winning shot? None of them, Chris Paul. And he hasn't even played these first two games of the second round, but, I mean, like, they're still tied 1-1. That hamstring's going to be a big thing to look at. But John Wall, he's got the injury today. He's got the five broken bones in his left-handed wrist. Does this pretty much put an end for the Wizards' run through the playoffs?
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to say that it does, because Wall, you know, he playmakes, he scores. He's the heart and soul of the team, even though Paul Pierce is the one hitting clutch shots when it matters. But John Wall is the guy who runs the offense. He's the guy who sets up everyone, so it's gonna crush the Wizards. But they still could win maybe one more game, I think. But I think there's an end to their season right now with Wall out.
Yeah, that's really a tough loss for them. They were really playing well this year. Especially, this has been a fun NBA playoffs to watch. Especially, I still think that first Clippers series might have been the best series almost in NBA history, where almost every game tied in first quarter, second quarter, third quarter. Who do you see really rising out of the West to compete for the NBA title?
Right now, it's kind of hard to say because of the way things are going in L.A., because the Clippers are looking really good. I think it depends on Blake Griffin, the way he's been playing. I really think that maybe he could push the team to the finals, but the Warriors are a good matchup for them. If the Warriors or Grizzlies end up playing the Clippers, both of those teams are really good matches for them. To me, I think it's either the Warriors or Grizzlies that will make it to the finals. It has to be from that series. Whoever wins that, I think, could eventually beat the Clippers or Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, and then head to the finals. So either Warriors or Grizzlies, excuse me. But you can't say for sure. It's really tough right now. All the teams, I feel like, are so evenly matched. It's hard to say.
Yeah, and it really shows how the parity has really come in with NBA. When, you know, years past, one, two, three teams. Now, you know, it's four or five teams deep, even going out. A team like the Hawks competing with the one seed. Do you see anybody from the East being able to beat a West team?
No, I don't see that. I just don't think they don't have that toughness. The Hawks, I've been a little disappointed with their playoff run so far. They're showing that they're not as tough as these other teams. I mean, if the Wizards had John Wall, if he were to stay healthy and didn't get this injury, I think the Wizards could have actually upset them, because they're just not tough. And they rely on Kyle Korver a little too much, and he's been struggling. I just don't see him making out of the East. So, yeah, and even if it's Cavs or Bulls, I still don't think they could beat a Western Conference team right now.
Definitely. Now, I don't know if – did you have Curry to win the MVP, or were you in a Harden side?
I was a little on the Harden side, even though I love Curry. I mean, he's one of my favorite players. And he does deserve it. It's not like he doesn't, but I just thought Harden deserved it a little more because of what he did in Houston. And he carried a team that was hit with injuries. There's one point where I believe he was playing with a bunch of rookies and first-round players. That was early in the season. But for him to be able to carry that team to second place in the Western Conference. I think that was just amazing what he did. And they didn't have Howard. I mean, if you take out Harden from the equation, I think the Rockets would have been a lottery team. But if you take out Curry from the Warriors, I think they would have probably still made the playoffs.
Definitely. I agree with that. And I actually have the Curry received 100 of 130 votes, and Harden received 25 of 130 votes. So between the two of that, they got 125 out of 130 votes. And while Steph Curry, he might be one of the best players in the NBA, I don't think he's the most valuable player. Like you said, if it wasn't for Harden, they would probably be a lottery team this year.
Yeah, some people, I think some people forget the V in MVP. It means value. It doesn't mean the best player in the league. I think just people just overlook that.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I just think that it was really just the role that Curry was having and the energy that he brings this year. You saw him all over. And it's been so long since Golden State has been relevant. I just think a lot of people were blind. He almost got robbed, James Harden did. But, you know, he might be able to get his revenge in the playoffs. It's been a while since the MVP has won a championship.
Yeah, but the way the Houston Rockets are playing right now, too, I just don't think they have toughness. I don't think they're tested in the first round. So that's the reason why the Clippers are a more tougher team. They play the Spurs. One thing about the West is, you know, how like all the teams are close to each other. The Spurs could have easily been second place. They just lost that last game to the Pelicans in the season. They fell to sixth. But they're only a game separated the Spurs and the Rockets. That's the second and sixth seed right there. So I think the Spurs were a tougher team than the Rockets, and the Clippers beat them, and now they have all kinds of confidence going into this round. And that's why I think the Clippers are doing what they're doing, even without Chris Paul. They're just a tougher team. I don't know if Harden could get his revenge here in the playoffs.
Definitely. And, I mean, I would argue that Blake Griffin has been the best player in the postseason this year. I mean, he had those back-to-back triple-doubles that was boosting that boosted the Clippers. I just see when you have a power forward putting up those kind of numbers in a playoff game, you're really, really tough to beat.
Yeah, I agree with that. Completely agree. I've always criticized Griffin in the years past because of his lack of toughness and then his inconsistency. And he didn't like attacking the rim as much before. He would shy away from contact. But this year, he's been mentally tough. And you see it, too. He doesn't even complain to the referees as much anymore. He just plays his game. He's trying to be physical in the paint now. His mid-range jumper is more consistent. I just love the mentality he plays with now. And that's the reason why I think the Clippers are as good as they are right now, is Griffin. It's his maturity that's helped them be this good.
And it's nice to see with all the promise that the Clippers have showed for the last few years, to finally come to maturation in that Spurs series. And it's not like the Spurs made mistakes. They didn't do anything wrong. The Clippers just outplayed them. And they made the plays, and they really executed well. So, like you said, Houston didn't get a good challenge in the first round. They're playing in almost different leagues right now with the intensity that the Clippers-Spurs series had and what they're coming into now. And I think Golden State better watch out, too. Now, they're going to have a test in the Grizzlies, but that first series didn't really give them a challenge with the Pelicans.
Yeah, if you look at it, the Grizzlies weren't really challenged either. They went to five games with the Blazers. But, yeah, the Warriors still have to watch out because the Grizzlies are a tough defensive team. I think one thing about the Warriors is that if they could make it past the Grizzlies, then they will be tested too, because I think the Grizzlies could take them to seven games possibly. But it just shows for the Grizzlies how important Mike Conley is too, as I'm sure you guys know, last game when he came back and he did a good job defensively on Curry and hit some big shots down the stretch. He's a key player for the Grizzlies.
Definitely. And I saw this report today that Tom Thibodeau up in Chicago could be on his way out. What is information have you heard about this? Like, do you have any knowledge of this or what the status is to be? Because, I mean, Chicago if they could beat the Cavaliers, I don't think they will. But, I mean, how could a coach that's potentially going to the conference finals be on his way out?
I've heard about this before. I think he's having problems with the front office. I think that's what the dilemma is. But I think his job, I think it depends on if the Bulls make it past the Cavaliers. If they are to get eliminated by the Cavaliers here in the second round, then I think he may lose his job. If they get past them, I think the front office will be happy and they'll keep him around. And one thing I had to mention, too, is that if the Bulls could get past the Cavaliers, I think they could beat the Hawks or Wizards, whichever team comes out from the 1-5 matchup. So I think Tom Thibodeau's job will be safe only if they beat the Cavs.
Absolutely. And I actually went back and looked. We had you on the program last time on October 29th, which coincidentally was also the day of the Sixers' first game. Now,
yes.
We knew the Sixers were going to be bad. We just didn't know how bad they were going to be.
They did a good job.
They did a very good job being bad. Now, they're going to arguably get a top five pick, maybe even a top three. Who do you see the Sixers targeting as their guy at the top of the draft?
I mean, obviously they can't look for a big man anymore. They have too many of those. They have to go for a point guard. They traded Michael Carter-Williams. So I think D'Angelo Russell may be the best choice for them. They don't need front court players. I think they just need a better back court now after they traded away Carter-Williams.
Definitely. And that's actually who I was saying at the beginning of the show, that I wanted D'Angelo Russell out of Ohio State. I think he could come in and give the Sixers what they need. I mean, I understand he'd be a rookie. He's got to learn it. But he can definitely grow into the player that the Sixers need moving forward.
I have to ask you guys a question. What did you guys think of that Michael Carter-Williams trade?
I'll be honest. At first, I disliked it. You know, I thought reigning rookie of the year, why would you trade him? You know, he's a bigger sized point guard. I think he's a 6'6", 6'7". You know, you don't have those big, huge point guards just come along every day. But the thing is he can't score. He can't shoot. He's not a great shooter. You know, looking back at it, I'm okay with it. But when it first happened, I was pretty pissed off, to be honest.
Yeah, I was thinking the same, too. At first when it happened, I was like, why'd they do it? You know, he has so much potential. He won Rookie of the Year. But then, yeah, he can't shoot. He's inefficient. One other trade that still kind of bugs me is the KJ McDaniels one. I really didn't understand that one.
I agree
100%. That was one guy who I would have liked to have keep around.
Especially a shooter, the way he was.
Absolutely.
Especially with the Sixers need.
Definitely. But you got to also remember, he had that really unique contract where he could leave at the end of the season.
I think that's what he planned to do.
You know, he didn't really fit into the whole, you know, we got to build, you know, let it work out. He wanted to come in, you know, win right away, which he wouldn't want to. But really, my big curiosity is on Dario Saric. Can you give me anything about how he's doing over, and I believe he's in Turkey, I think, playing. Can you give me any insight on how he's doing over there?
Who is it?
Dario Saric.
Dario Saric? I haven't really watched his games. I'm not sure.
Okay, I didn't know if you had heard anything about in Turkey. I know that I believe it was ESPN had on the EuroLeague stack, and he won league MVP over there. So that's definitely something to look forward to.
Us Sixer fans have to dig quite deep to look for something to be excited for.
Oh yeah,
the last couple of years.
It's hard.
That was last year's pick that they stashed. One thing I'm hearing right now is that they want to stash another pick. That's the only thing I've heard. But I haven't really paid attention to him in Turkey. I don't really watch overseas basketball much. I don't keep track of it that much. I just focus on the NBA. But I heard that he is something special whenever he does come to the NBA. but I haven't really watched his game to know much.
Thanks for giving us a little bit on that. But before we take up too much of your time, before we let you go, I just want to get your feeling. Who would you pick to win it all this year? I know we talked about it, but just one last. Who would you really take? Who really has the momentum to take this title down?
This is an interesting one because years past we've had the Spurs, Heat, Lakers, Celtics, big time teams like that. Those teams aren't around anymore. I feel like it's a new era, so it's a little hard. But I'm going with the Golden State Warriors. I still feel like they could win it all, even though they're inexperienced. They would be inexperienced when they get to the finals, but I think they have what it takes because they're number one defensively. They had the best offense. They have the MVP, Stephen Curry. I think if they could overcome the Grizzlies, they have a really good shot of making it to the finals, and whoever comes out of the East, I still believe that they could beat them. So I have the Warriors.
Oh, yeah, that's my pick, too, and I'd love to see Steph Curry get a ring. But thanks a lot for coming on with us, and we'll have to get you back on maybe during the finals or something.
Yeah, that'll be excellent. No problem, and thanks for having me.
Tonight, everybody, that was Behan from Marvel.com. He's the NBA editor over there. I'm talking NBA finals and stuff. Hey, so
that's my favorite thing about the NBA. Before I didn't cut you off, but it's really one of the sports that is a worldwide draw.
Yeah,
played in every country.
So we have about 8 minutes left of our show. Okay, so do you want to do something really funny real quick? Since it is our show, we can kind of do whatever we want.
Oh yeah.
So I'll get you 50
hey, Amber,
later
because
Mike has
all
of us. Like,
what's
that?
You're on the air, Am. How are you?
Hello? Oh, I'm good. How are you? I'm with Morgan.
Hello. What's going on, guys?
I really enjoyed your interview.
We're putting our girlfriends on blast. We're trying to listen nicely and quietly to our show.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
It's okay. I don't worry about it. Either. It's all right. I think they have us on Bluetooth or speakerphone or something. That's why it didn't work out. But I saw their phone number show up on the call log, and I figured I would have some fun switching it around because it is, after all, our show can kind of do whatever we want. Hence why we changed it to our radio so that we could say fuck all day.
Exactly. I really needed to play that song for LeSean McCoy. I really think that he overstepped his bounds I'd like to be in with Josh Ennis if he'd want to burn all the LeSean McCoy jerseys in Philadelphia. I would definitely give mine in and give my name to this event.
I should reach out to him and see what he wants to do. But the thing is, I don't know. Like, I really like my LeSean McCoy jersey because I like the way that it looks.
Is it authentic? Is it an authentic one?
Not with stretched on. No, I have.
Burn that. Topic.
I have one of the Nike ones like when they first switched over.
You know what we should do is we should try to find an authentic one.
And then
convince everyone else to burn one.
Someone we know
thereby creating a substantial market for a jersey for a running back who leads the franchise in rushing yards.
I mean, someone we know has an authentic LeSean McCoy jersey. I've seen it. I've seen it at his house.
Who?
Our good friend Kyle.
Ooh.
He has an authentic stitched autograph to LeSean McCoy jersey.
Autograph.
That he wears and is not framed.
So the autograph's useless.
Well, essentially.
Essentially.
I want to say it's a 29, too.
If that's a... Oh, my God. Then we definitely have to do the jersey burning.
Get all the 29s. Who was it? Who did we have on if they had a 29 shading? Jeff Warren of Philadelphia Sports Table.
Yeah,
he told us.
Really, if you think about it, you don't have it. I mean, unless you bought a jersey of one of the rookies last year, you probably don't have the Eagles jersey of anybody on the team.
Probably not. I mean, maybe a Michael Kendricks, a Fletcher Cox.
Right.
But how long are they going to be here?
Yeah, you don't even know. So I mean, right now I'm waiting. I'll probably buy Jordan Matthews jersey this year.
Yeah, I've heard that's a pretty safe
like
one.
It. With 81, right?
Yeah, 81.
Finally, there's a great receiver in that again after Jason Avant wore it for so long.
I mean, I have like two or three T.O. jerseys. I had a black one. I had a white one. And I had like one of those knockoff ones, you know?
Yeah.
Like some kind of crazy silver color. But like, Jason Avant just kind of took 81. I was like, what the hell is going on here? Like, 81 is reserved for good.
Top 10 receivers.
Yeah, like great receivers. Like, Randy Moss wore it when he was in New England.
Right.
Calvin wears 81.
Exactly.
But T.O.
To speak of, Jordan Matthews made me think of it, these rookie young receivers. And right now, when we come back Monday, we're going to have some football to talk. As far as
fantasy football.
Well, not just fantasy, but these rookies are going to see Chip Kelly for the first time this weekend.
Yeah.
They're going to be with the veterans for the first time next week. So these next few weeks are some big weeks for the Eagles, and who's going to start to take hold at cornerback and safety. I looked at this roster, and really what I see is, especially from the secondary, our biggest need.
Well, I heard you say some interesting things on the way over here, that Jordan Hicks is listed as an
outside
linebacker.
Now, I did read his draft report, and he did play both in college. Now, he was also injury-ridden and back and forth. So
now, was he drafted specifically to play outside linebacker? That's my question.
See, I'll say this.
I'm writing that down for
Kiko
Monday.
Alonso coming in with all the inside linebackers that they added, I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of this versatility, more of this inside-outside player. Now, you already know that Bill Davis wants cornerbacks who play safety and safeties who play corner. Now he wants inside linebackers who can put their hand on the ground and rush the passer.
That's what we need more than anything.
And I'll tell you right now, we have two of them.
The amoeba.
And I've been saying this for a long time. If anybody's been listening to the show since the beginning, you know I've been quoting Justin Turner. He just said, the amoeba team, meaning that you're going to have a team who can go in the 4 and 5 and 3-man front, depending on what they want to do, and take our base defense and cover 3 and 4 wide receivers at the same time.
Definitely. And, you know, I mean, we're making a lot of hype about this Cowboys offensive line. And rightfully so. They are arguably the best offensive line.
One of the best.
But you got to remember, the Eagles manhandled their...
And our front seven is only a year better. That's
yeah.
People don't understand.
You got to remember, they manhandled
our front seven was,
and they brought in Kiko.
As good as our front seven was, our two starting inside linebackers missed almost half the year.
Did you know that Kiko's... Alonzo's brother plays for the Reading Phillies.
I did not know that.
He does, and he just suffered the same injury last night that Kiko suffered last year.
Ooh.
So, and he's a, you know, Phillies prospect. Reading Phillies. I want to say he's an outfielder, but I don't know for sure. And to get us on the Phillies since we're here, they've hit the 10-game mark.
I know, I have to watch them.
They've hit the 10-game mark. We will have Phillies discussion.
Hey,
in August.
It made it to May.
Hey.
I made it all the way to May without having to worry about the Phillies.
Well, today's May 7th, and the season started April 6th. You got the whole first month out of the way.
So they're basically probably 20-some games in a month you play. So they're probably...
Probably about 26.
It's probably like 10 and 16.
Well, we only have about a minute left or so, so I'll look in that next minute to give us the stat before we run out of time. But thank you everybody out there for listening. Thanks for Jeff Kane of the Patriots podcast. Sorry for jumping on. Thanks to Vahan from Bobble.com for talking NBA. Our good friend Nick over at Broken Mill Sports dropping by talking Eagles. We're here at the Red Sound Studios out in Warrington, PA. Special thanks to Ben, the audio guru out there. Oh, yeah,
bring it back.
Luda.
Remember, always listen to WizWit Radio, Monday and Thursday nights at 8 p.m.
8 to 9:30. Check us out at WizWitRadio.com.
Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
We don't have Instagram.
I will get it. Just for you.
Just for us. And you're right. 10 and 18. Thanks,
no.
Thanks everybody, for listening, and tune in on Monday.